Okay, so our next talk is Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter Camera, Preparing to Scout the Next Frontier by Lawrence et al., and the talk will be given by Samuel Lawrence.
Okay, thanks, Ryan. Good morning. I'm happy to be here. Much like Noah did, I'd like to point out I'm actually here representing the LROC instrument, and in the relative scheme of things, I'm not that important, so I want to call out the efforts especially of Martin Schimmel, who did a lot of the calibration effort and, in fact, spent so much time at MS Cube that the hotel he's staying at actually now has something called the Martin Room because he was there for so long. So in today's talk, I'm going to give an overview of the LROC instrument and our measurement objectives. I'm going to give a brief update on LROC status. I'm going to summarize our calibration progress. I don't want to steal Martin's thunder. He'll actually be presenting more than you probably ever wanted to know about LROC calibration at AGU this year. And I'll discuss NAC targeting, which is actually important, especially as we want to bring the larger planetary community into the LROC effort in a more cohesive way. Okay, so for those of you who haven't heard our spiel before, LROC actually consists of four separate components. There is a wide-angle camera subsystem, which will be mapping the moon in the ultraviolet and visible, a multispectral imager at 100 meters per pixel in the visible and 400 meters per pixel in the UV. There's also two narrow-angle cameras, which are co-aligned telescopes. They'll be collecting images at a half meter per pixel resolution. A point I'd like to make here that we always stop and make when we give these talks is that even though there are two NAC telescopes, the NAC is not a stereo instrument. There are only two telescopes to increase the swath width. We are not automatically collecting stereo data. And then there's finally the sequence and compressor system, which is essentially the electronics that control the instrument. So here's our status. As of August, LROC is fully integrated onto LRO. You can see here the two NAC barrels right here. These are the NACs, and there's the WAC up there under or above LOLA. We have collected all the data we're going to get in terms of laboratory calibration efforts at MS Cubed. Our preparations at the Science Operations Center at Tempe, which is a beautiful facility, and I would encourage everyone to try and get there if you ever visit ASU's campus, are proceeding very smoothly. We were kind of bummed about the launch delay, but we can certainly use the extra time. At the moment, we are all sort of waiting for the last phase of our calibration effort, which will be to actually occur during the LRO spacecraft thermal vacuum testing at Goddard, which actually starts in a couple of weeks and will continue through the end of November. So here's an overview of what our measurement objectives are. LROC was specifically designed to meet two primary objectives. These are the two primary objectives that were actually competed in the LRO AO. The first is unambiguous identification of meter scale hazards near important targets for human exploration at about the half meter per pixel level. And the reason for this, the classic example that Mark loves to use is on the Apollo 15 mission, where they actually set down the Falcon in a small crater, which had not been visible in orbital imagery. If the actual angle of the LEM was about 10 degrees, if it had been at 15 degrees, then the liftoff from the moon's surface would not have been survivable, although they probably would have tried it anyway. We're also going to be mapping the permanently shadowed and sunlit regions using the WAC. In addition to those two primary objectives, there's also six bonus objectives, including meter-scale mapping of features in the polar regions. We're going to be collecting photometric and geometric stereo observations of selected regions on the lunar surface. We're also going to be doing global multispectral imaging using the seven bands of the WAC, as well as a global morphology-based map using just one of the bands. We're going to be characterizing the regolith properties using the NAC images, and we'll be determining unambiguously the current impact hazards, which is an important consideration for the design of human interplanetary spacecraft, by comparing NAC images of selected regions to photographs collected during the Apollo J missions using the panoramic camera, which are of comparable image resolution. So this is an image here on the right of the NAC-1 flight unit we're setting up here for the radiometric calibration. NAC-1 and NAC-2 were both calibrated at MS Cubed in San Diego from February through April in 2008, so almost 3 months. We have almost completed reducing this ginormous data set, which is just a whole lot of images, essentially. We did most of the usual tests, including geometric calibration. We collected a lot of dark images. We're happy with the linearity. The one thing that did come out in the testing is there is a minor, though perfectly correctable scattered light issue in both of the NACs. And we're going to be correcting that using the flat fields. We're happy with the radiometric calibration, but we'll be finalizing that and also for the WAC using an on-orbit calibration. Spectral responses within specs, and there were no leaks found during the stray light characterization. And in fact, we actually met or exceeded all of our required parameters, so we're very happy with the NAC performance to date. I will call out again that the radiometric accuracy is an estimate at this point. We're going to actually have to confirm it using in-flight observations. Now, for those of you who haven't heard, what we discovered during the testing of our first wide-angle camera flight unit was that it was likely that the flight spare would have better performance. So even though the first wide-angle camera flight unit was fully capable of achieving the mission and was actually installed on LRO at one point in July, the project made the decision, or we requested and the project agreed, that we would swap out WAC-1 for WAC-2. And so WAC-2 is actually the one that's on the spacecraft now. We calibrated that throughout the month of July. I was at MS Cube for about 3 weeks, and Martin was there for even longer. We're very, very happy with the performance. This is actually WAC-2 here in a picture. It's a lot smaller than it looks. This picture doesn't give you a size of scale, but it's a way smaller than you'd think it would be. It's like a small little metal flower. But we're very happy with the performance. This picture here on the bottom, this is actually the flat field for the visible filters. I'll point out that this gray area here is what will, the area of the CCD will actually be imaging for the global color images. And then we'll be using for the global morphologic base map the whole width of the CCD here for the 600 nanometer filter. Although we really could pick any one of the five, we're very, very happy with the filters that were assembled for WAC-2. Especially if those of you who saw pictures of the WAC-1 filters will understand this why. But we're very happy, and especially the spectral response looks just very good. Okay, so next up on deck is that we will be performing a spacecraft level calibration effort in conjunction with LRO's thermal vacuum testing at Goddard. And the reason for this is that due to the compressed testing schedule, we were never able to fully operate all three of the instruments using the flight SCS system, which is unfortunate, but at least we'll be able to correct that. So what we're going to do, the LRO thermal vacuum begins in a couple of weeks and then we'll run through the end of November. We're going to aggressively check the instrument functionality and the alignment of the optical systems. We're going to operate the NACS and the WAC with the SCS at a whole range of different temperature and integration times so that we can fully exploit the capabilities of the sensor in lunar orbit. This is unfortunately something we weren't able to do during the laboratory testing, but we will be able to do it during the Goddard thermal vacuum testing, and so it's pretty much critical that we get this data to finish off our calibration. Now we have a comprehensive on-orbit calibration plan, which will also be vital for interpreting our results as we try to achieve our science objectives. We're going to be collecting essentially the usual suspects, including frequent dark images. We're going to be collecting NAC and WAC views of the Earth and Moon during the cruise phase. We'll be collecting limb images, basically to refine our pointing. We'll be doing 90-degree yaws during the commissioning phase over the equatorial regions of the Moon to get flat fields. And we'll be doing repeat imaging of the infamous lunar calibration sites, especially the Apollo sites, and in particular Apollo 16, as we attempt to refine the radiometric calibration. We'll also be working with the USGS to use ROLO data for the same purpose, so we're pretty confident we'll have a very good radiometric calibration. And we'll be, of course, be collecting star observations and possibly some of the gas giants like Jupiter for calibration efforts. Okay, so we're very happy with the instruments as delivered, and we're eager to start using them. And so one of the things that we really want to hit on here is the capabilities of the NAC. There's a lot of misconceptions, I'll say, floating around about what we can and can't do. In the 50-kilometer by 50-kilometer nominal mapping phase, the first year of the mission, which you'll hear called the nominal mission or the exploration phase, the NACS will be capable of getting a 5-kilometer by 25-kilometer image of the lunar surface. And in fact, LROC and Mini-RF are the only two instruments that really need to be targeted, specifically and actively. This imposes certain operational constraints. So What that means in practical sense is that you'll need multiple observations to get any sort of aerial coverage, which is especially difficult at the equatorial regions, and when you have to consider illumination considerations for the photometric stereo, it becomes even harder. And one of the things we've been doing over the past several months is trying to model different sites on the lunar surface so we can see if we're going to be meeting NASA's objectives or not. This is a test case here of the Apollo 17 site, which is a high priority science target as well as an exploration target, because the Apollo 17 descent stage was actually cataloged much like the LDAF was. Here in the red is a standard 25 by 25 kilometer test box, and the testing here was performed, or the modeling, using the spacecraft's ephemeris data to see how many NAC images it would take to get the right level of coverage. And the answer is that it will take approximately 22 observations to get complete photometric and aerial coverage of this site, and that will take the entire 1 year exploration phase of the mission, and this is just for the Apollo 17 site. Now, I will point out, we do expect to take about 30,000 NAC images during the exploration phase of the mission, and we will be imaging about 7% of the moon. But for these high-priority sites, a lot of effort and a lot of thought needs to go into this, especially when we're planning the actual imaging campaigns, and especially when these sites aren't at the lunar poles. So as of October 6th, we have almost 3,000 targets in our system. We're using the REACT software from ACT to do our targeting. The number of targets is slowly starting to increase as we get closer to launch. So we're still diligently working away. Now, another question that we get pretty frequently are, where are you getting your targets from? Well, there's first of all the science objectives, which we outlined in the original LROC proposal. That's for the co-investigators. And then there's the science objectives that the participating scientists proposed and were selected for. And then there are, of course, the exploration targets, where NASA is interested in sending humans back to the moon. And we're deriving this from a number of different sources, and our goal is to be as absolutely comprehensive as we can be. We're especially going to focus on the exploration systems architecture study sites, the top 10 design reference sites, which are both ISRU and science sites, along with the 60 sites or so proposed by Jeff Taylor and Paul Spoudis for automated sample return and human exploration, and the sites proposed for the first lunar outpost project, which was an early 90s effort to put in an outpost on the lunar surface. We'll also be focusing on the international calibration standard areas, along with the unused Apollo and Apollo applications program sites, considered but not used by the Rump Group, anthropomorphic sites where there were, like, the lunar module was intentionally crashed into the lunar surface, and S4B, so forth, spectral anomalies, lava tubes, and that sort of thing. So the final thing is that we would like to hear from you. We want to involve the planetary science community to the fullest extent possible in this exciting mission. And to that end, we're going to have a really snazzy public targeting interface that will go live 2 months before launch. You'll be able to enter outside targeting requests, what we call a priority 5 level, which is outside science. And in this fancy interface, you'll be able to actually see both LROC images that have been, or at least before launch, you'll be able to see the targets that have already been entered, and after launch, you'll be able to see targets that have already been collected. To prevent people from highlighting Mare Crisium and checking all, we're going to be limiting people to 5 targets a day, and you'll have to register and provide an email address, and we will be checking, so no cheating. So that's pretty much it, and I'll be happy to answer any questions you have, and we're very excited and looking forward to actually using this great instrument on the lunar surface.
Questions?
Yeah. Okay, that's a technique which has been used in the intelligence community for a while but hasn't been used so much in planetary. It's where we're going to take repeat images of the same area on the lunar surface at different solar illumination settings or, you know, conditions, and then we'll use that to derive meter or even half meter scale topography data, DEMs essentially. Oh, we will absolutely be doing that, for sure. Yeah, yeah. There's a photometric action group that we're working diligently on. But for NASA's needs, in terms of both the automated landing of a outpost resupply craft or safe human landing, they are very keen to get this, be able to do this terrain reference navigation as they come in on final approach.
questions? All right, I think we're about out of time. So.
Okay.